The conversation turns to health and wellness and a focus on the fact that yesterday was World Obesity Day. Now, we've known for some time already that obesity is a comorbidity linked to poor outcomes in terms of COVID-19. But really interestingly, yesterday, the World Obesity Federation released a report just giving us a sense of just how closely it is linked. Their figures, based on research done at Johns Hopkins University, suggesting that the risk of dying of COVID-19 is about 10 times higher in countries where more than half the adult population is overweight. 10 times higher. And while age is still the biggest factor affecting the likelihood of severe illness or death from COVID, that report found that being overweight comes a very close second. This is what the CEO of the World Obesity Federation, Johanna Ralston, had to say yesterday. Old age is unavoidable, but the conditions that contribute to overweight and obesity can be highly avoidable if governments step up and we all join forces to reduce the impact of this disease. The failure to address the root causes of obesity over many decades is clearly responsible for hundreds of thousands of preventable deaths. It's pretty sobering stuff and well worth discussing further. I'm delighted to have on the line with us Dr. Wayne May, who is an endocrinologist at Life Kingsbury Hospital, standing by to talk to us about obesity and COVID in this country and about obesity in general as well. Dr. May, lovely to have you on the show. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, and thank you for having me.
Wayne, those were obviously global stats I mentioned there, looked at by that Johns Hopkins team, but do we have stats on South Africa? I mean, or anecdotally from what you've seen, are we following that trend of obesity being a huge predictor of patient outcomes in COVID?
So we don't have great local stats, but generally from what we're seeing, yes, we do tend to follow the same stream as elsewhere in the world, so that would be very similar.
Okay. And can you maybe explain for us what it is about being obese that makes one more at risk from COVID?
So with obesity comes a lot of comorbidities. So those comorbidities put you at risk as well. So things like diabetes, blood pressure, and cholesterol. But even if you take out the comorbidities and you take somebody who's obese with none of those comorbidities, in other words, they're just purely overweight, those patients also are at increased risk. And part of that is when you're overweight, there tends to be more inflammation in your system to start. And we know that with the COVID virus, that some patients are prone to a marked inflammatory response. And if you're already sitting with higher inflammation because of your obesity, then this would just exacerbate all of that inflammation.
Okay. Wayne, obviously this has made the issue of obesity come under the spotlight perhaps more intensely than ever before right now. So maybe let's put COVID aside for the time being and talk a little bit more in general terms. I know the latest stats tell us that more than 14% of the world's population would be classified as obese under current criteria and that rate continues to rise. Can you talk to us a little bit about the factors that are contributing to that?
So part of the reasons why we're increasing is obviously the abundance of high calorie dense food. So they're easily available. Prices relatively are lower, so people can afford those. There's a lot of inactivity. People don't exercise as much. We've got various means of transport, so we don't have to actually walk and do exercise. And so with the two main issues are those increased calories, reduced activity, and those are big drivers of the obesity epidemic.
What about the genetic factor? Wayne, I've heard of the set point theory that suggests that everybody has got a sort of a weight range at which their body will happily settle, and that fighting against that range can be an uphill battle. Do you give that theory much credence?
Yeah, so there definitely is. So in terms of the genetics first, so there are certain genetic conditions that predispose you to weight. And so if you look at the two sides, one is your increased appetite, so increased intake. The other is reduced metabolism, so you don't burn off as much energy. If you look at where genetic problems lie, they lie at an appetite center. So when we look for these abnormal genes and we find them, they're all genes that affect appetite, not genes that affect metabolism, which is where most people think the problem would be. And when you look further into that, yes, in terms of a set point, there does seem to be a set point that bodies will be happy to maintain a certain weight. And so the issue then comes in when you're trying to lose weight, because now you've got this body trying to defend a certain weight. You're trying to lose weight. And as you lose weight, the body fights to try and maintain that. And over the years, we've been trying to find something that alters that set point. And the only things potentially that do alter that set point are medications, which we don't have a great amount of. And the other one is bariatric surgery, interestingly, which does affect that set point and allows the body to be happy at a lower weight and defend a lower weight, which makes it easier for patients then to lose and maintain weight.
Okay, I want to speak about both of those treatment options in a little bit more detail. But firstly, I have to address this issue. Every time we speak about anything to do with obesity and anything to do with body shaming or body positivity, inevitably I hear from a handful of listeners who say this is their own fault. If people ate less and exercised more, they wouldn't have this problem. Is it really that simple, Wayne?
No. So at its core, obesity results because you're taking excess calories or you're burning off less. So you've got a disparity between what you're taking and what you're burning off. The question is, why do you take in more? And so we know now that obesity has been defined as a disease, and this has now been for a couple of years. And even though the obesity is defined as having excess body fat, at its core, one of the big problems is appetite regulation. So the symptom of obesity is there's a problem at the appetite center. So either you don't feel as full as you should, or your appetite is just heightened so that you want to take in more. And this is not something that people can control. There are things that aggravate that, in other words, stress and that will make you eat more on top of that. But the actual appetite center, the way it looks at food and how it feels about how full it is not something that's in people's control. And therefore, if that's not in their control, the consequence that they get from that, having excess body fat, is therefore also not in their control.
Having said that, Wayne, a lot of people still don't know that and still have this stigma attached to the concept of obesity. Is that stigma in itself a problem in terms of people hesitating to seek help sooner rather than later because they know they're going to be judged when out in public?
Yeah, so that problem lies on both ends. So it's with patients in terms of they feel that they won't be adequately looked at and managed properly because of that. But also, I mean, even at a doctor level, there are quite a few doctors who also see that the fault is purely at the patient level. And so, you know, if you hit the wrong doctor, you may find that there is this element of being judged. In other words, you just need to exercise more. You just need to eat less. But it's not that simple. So, yes, it does lead to patients being hesitant in looking for treatment options.
We're in conversation with Dr. Wayne May, who is an endocrinologist at Life Kingsbury Hospital, talking to us today about obesity. A few listener questions already coming through on the WhatsApp line, and you're very welcome to phone in as well on 021-446-0567. Before I tackle any of those questions, Wayne, is there any link between sleep and obesity? I've heard some suggestion that disrupted sleep cycles can be a factor.
Yeah, so I mean, it goes both ways. So certainly if you're not getting enough sleep and you're having reduced sleep hours or reduced quality of sleep, in other words, the type of sleep that you've had, then that affects hormones that normally are doing certain things at night. And that can then lead to increased weight as well. So often if you're stressed, then you don't sleep as well, you have higher cortisol levels, and then that can ultimately lead to excess weight as well. On the other flip side of that, obviously, if you've got excess weight, then you can have sleeping problems from that, so like sleep apnea, and then that can affect your sleep quality again, and so it becomes a vicious circle where the two, sleep and weight, can affect each other.
Thanks for that. Wayne, one of our listeners asking on the WhatsApp line if you could comment on the link between menopause and obesity.
So with menopause, we do tend to see an increase in body weight. The exact mechanisms for that, in other words, as mentioned earlier, the two key areas when we look at why people put on weight is it an appetite issue? Is it a reduced metabolism? We're still trying to work out exactly in menopause where that problem lies. So is it because there's a subtle change in appetite and they tend to eat more because of the hormonal changes? It may be. There's been no evidence or hard evidence that I'm aware of that affects your metabolism as such. So certainly there is an increase with menopause. It may be a subtle increase in appetite related to the hormones.
Okay, thanks for that. Now, let's go back to the issue of treatment. treatment approaches can include behavioral therapy, they can include the use of medications, or extend to surgery. You mentioned medication still not as far along as we might hope it is. How does the medication work, and what do we have in our arsenal?
So effectively, the problem that happened with medication is that when they were developing medications originally, they were looking for things that increased metabolism. And the problem came with those medications is that, yes, they increased metabolism, but they increased heart rate and blood pressure, and along with that came other problems. Now it's shifted in that we know that obesity is an appetite issue. So the medications that are being developed are now looking more at appetite, and they're using the genetic models based on what we understand from there, and looking at targets and trying to get specific medications for that. So some of the medications that are coming out, there's one that relates to a gut hormone that feeds onto insulin and also feeds onto the appetite center. And that medication is... that hormone is one of the reasons why you lose weight in bariatric surgery. So now it's been made into a medication. It is available in this country. You can get it, but because it's a protein, it's not in tablet form. It comes in an injectable form. So that is now available in this country. And if you've been following the news recently in the States, about 2 weeks ago, they published a trial on a very similar class of drug, which had really, really good weight loss. Okay. And that one was causing about 50% of patients to lose 15% of their body weight.
Sure.
So we're so those are quite good figures in terms of weight loss medication. So we are slowly heading in the right direction with these, but we don't have enough of them. In the States, they've got another two tablet versions or tablets that were used for medication, which we don't quite have yet. They've had them for about 7 years, but we're still waiting on the side. I think priorities are elsewhere in terms of drug regulation. So those we still wait for. But certainly we've got the one at the moment, which is now available. Yeah.
Okay. Before we run out of time, Wayne, John asking, is bariatric surgery really a successful treatment for obesity? Would you like to respond?
Yes. So bariatric surgery is now well established as a therapy. I think people must get rid of the notion that it's experimental and not well established. It's been around for decades. It's now endorsed as a formal treatment along with diet, exercise, medications. And it has been done in this country for a number of years. We've been operating since about 2006. It's brilliant in terms of comorbidities, particularly diabetes. You can reverse diabetes so that about a third of patients are non-diabetic when you look at them 10 years down the line in terms of surgery. So it is very efficacious. The side effects are minimal. You really just need to be on vitamins down the line to maintain things like calcium and iron, because they might be affected by the surgery. But it is now well established and very efficacious in terms of long-term weight loss. So when you look about 10, 15 years down the line, patients are still sitting with at least 26% of their weight gone. So it's the best thing in terms of losing large amounts of weight and maintaining it over a long period. And some of those relate to that altered set point, the change in gut hormones that we've mentioned.
Dr. Wayne May, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon. We unfortunately have to wrap it up there, but a fascinating conversation and a lot of information communicated. Thank you so much. Dr. May is an endocrinologist at Life Kingsbury Hospital. I'll finish with another WhatsApp saying, don't forget about mental health and obesity. This is my daily battle, antidepressants causing weight gain, and it never ends. Please just be kind is the plea on the WhatsApp line.